1290 AM Denmark, W250 CV Green Bay,
and always streaming on the Civic Media app. The Talk of Green.
ABC News, I'm Liz Landers. The White House says Israel has agreed to daily four-hour humanitarian pauses to get civilians out of Gaza and aid in. But there were fresh Israeli strikes hitting Hamas targets overnight near several hospitals in Gaza City.
Fireballs shooting skyward, people scrambling for cover. The Israeli bombardment intensifying near two of Gaza's main hospitals where Israel claims Hamas has command posts. And it all comes as the lives of 239 hostages in Gaza hang in the balance. The Palestinian Islamic Jihad releasing video of 77-year-old Hannah Katsir and 12-year-old Yagil Yaakov. The hostages pleading for Israel to expedite negotiations for their release.
ABC's Matt Gutman. West Virginia Senator Joe Manchin announcing he won't seek re-election next year, raising concern a Republican could take the seat while Manchin could become a third-party presidential candidate, hurting President Biden. This is ABC News.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Governor Evers sounds like he'll sign a bill to let local election clerks start counting absentee ballots the day before Election Day. That's one of several bills on voting the Assembly sent to his desk yesterday. Another bill would enact new rules for indefinitely confined voters. The Assembly also passed a number of proposed constitutional amendments. One would ban local governments from using private money to run elections. A man from Toma is going to federal prison for pretending to be a disabled veteran. A judge sentenced Jonathan Walker to up to 15 months yesterday. Walker never even served in the military, but since he claimed to be a disabled veteran, he won Defense Department contracts for his heating and air conditioning business. That includes a pair of contracts at Fort McCoy worth $2 million. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what you need to know closer to home.
For WGBW News, I'm Pete Schwabe. New jobs are on the way to Northeast Wisconsin. WLUK-TV reports that Accelerate, an electrical manufacturing company, will open a new plant in Little Chute. The move could bring as many as 200 new jobs to the Fox Valley. The building will be almost 400,000 square feet and is located just off Highway 41. Company is seeking electricians, millwrights, and systems technicians. This will be facility number 5 the company has nationwide. 3 are here in Northeast Wisconsin. Justice has been served. The man who stole the replica Lombardi trophy during a recording of Inside the Huddle at the bar has paid a $376 fine, according to municipal court records. Thomas Romps, 53, is from Houghton, Michigan, and was caught stealing the display thanks to security cameras. To make matters worse, he was wearing Lions memorabilia. Authorities suspect it was a prank, one that involved alcohol. And that's what you need to know. I'm Pete Schwabe, WGBW 97.9 News.
Mino and the Mayor.
Dr. Kristen Lyerly.
She walks in this morning, John's like, yeah, I told you look like somebody. I've been thinking about you. That's a little weird, John.
I didn't
but
put it that
ahead.
Way, Jim. No, he said she reminds me of Aunt Becky, Lori Loughlin from Full House.
Right.
Bailey WKRP.
I don't think
yes,
so.
Completely. Yes.
Weekday mornings from 6 until 8 on the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW, and Oshkosh Air Support, WISS.
And on the Civic Media app.
The Bucks lose in Indy. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Bucks' Giannis Antetokounmpo scored an incredible 54 points, and yet Milwaukee lost to the Pacers. The final, the Pacers 126, the Bucks 124. Adrian Griffin on watching Giannis at work, shooting 1 point shy of his career high of 55.
You know, it's just awesome to see someone with his length, his size, his footwork. He's going to go down as one of the greatest players to ever play this game.
College football, the Wisconsin Badgers have 3 games left in the season. Next week against Nebraska, followed by Minnesota, and tomorrow they host Northwestern. Badgers safety, Hunter Wohler.
You know, with the talent we have in the locker room, we haven't been good on Saturdays.
The Packers head to Pittsburgh to face the Steelers. Mike Tomlin has been the Steelers head coach since 2007, a year longer than Matt LaFleur has been in the NFL.
I don't think he's ever had a losing season, which is incredible. He's the model of consistency in this league.
That's Packers head coach Matt LaFleur. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
Here's your updated forecast. Chance for scattered rain showers this afternoon. Otherwise, cloudy skies. Highs around 43, northwest winds 8 to 15 miles an hour. Mainly cloudy tonight, lows around 29. A blend of clouds and sun tomorrow, 44. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Ray Miller. Right now, it's 36.
Sometimes I just cannot believe all the storms we've gone through here.
I can only hope that we'll be able to leave this house to you one day, baby. You're our legacy.
Planning for these disasters will make sure we're safe, and is the best way to protect that legacy.
Protect your legacy. Visit ready.gov/plan for the tools and tips you need to start your emergency preparedness plan today. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us. Where the fans own the team. This is the talk of Green Bay, 1590 AM and 97.9 FM WGBW.
On the oceans and upon our seas, fish full of mercury.
All right, welcome back to a special edition of the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. It's Friday. It means Friday is with my co-host, Sandy Williams, and my special guest, our special guest.
Hito Habo.
All right, so let's... Sandy, or something you want
yeah,
to
well,
say?
I just, you know, we've been talking about a range of things, all of it associated with the current conflict in Israel, the circumstance leading up to it, the circumstances there. And as Americans, we sort of have to look at it and say, okay, what should America be doing, and what's the prognosis? And one of the fears is that it turns into a wider war, that the West Bank becomes inflamed, that from the north on the Golan Heights, we end up with Hezbollah moving in from Lebanon, and the Israel having to respond there. And so we end up with a much broader situation. Is your prognosis, obviously you're here not getting a whole lot more intelligence than we are, but do you think it's going to go that direction before we get to solution, or do you think that it can be confined to the current sort of hotspot, which is primarily Gaza?
I have no idea. Yeah. I'm not a politician. I'm not a Middle East expert.
Yeah.
I'm not in the military, even though I do have lots of friends who are working these days. My entire family is in Israel, so I do communicate with them.
And they live in the north?
In the Haifa area, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. My close family is up north, but... You know, family, distant family and friends all over the country.
Yeah,
I don't know where it's going to go. Time will tell.
But do you think, you know, when this first happened, I thought, well, this is the end of a two-state solution for a long time because of the hot blood that's been created by October 7. Then over time, I began to think, well, maybe, however, this might be a watershed moment, and maybe this will be when the dust subsides and when this a near-term solution is reached in Gaza, maybe this will be the moment in which both sides will realize that they need to get to a two-state solution. Do you think that's possible?
Not in the near future. I don't think so. But I personally do wish for the day that Palestine has a sustainable democracy, that invest in education, health, and prosperity. And on that day, I do wish for a two-state solution.
Right now, I'm not sure if that's my view.
Yeah. Do the current partition, the way it's set up with Gaza being 140 square miles packed with people and the West Bank being different and more habitable, mm-hmm. but with the settlements that have complicated the West Bank solution, is if the two states were comprised as was proposed by Olmert when he made the proposal,
mm-hmm.
would Palestine be in a position to be self-sustaining? Would they have the industry? Would they have the land and the geography that would permit them to have a country that was self-sustaining?
Who is they? Israel, meaning?
No, the Palestinian. Oh. Would the Palestinian state, were it to be configured?
I think on the day that there is a democracy, a sustainable democracy that is not run by Hamas,
right.
I think the entire world, including Israel, will help that happen to build cities, to build hospitals, to build progressive system that uh-huh. can support that democracy
okay.
and keep up with the West. But that needs to come after the replacement of Hamas,
yes.
The liberation of the people from Hamas,
uh-huh.
Maybe one day.
Yeah.
Let's go to the phone lines and Malik, good morning to you, sir, from Racine. How are you? Thank you very much for the call. You say what?
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. I just want to call in and, just kind of share a little bit. I just had a question for your guest with regards to, I do disagree with a lot of the things that he's saying. I do feel like there is a little bias there. But I do want to get a little bit more information about this Israeli democracy. In respect to even our own government, we're not necessarily a democracy. We are a republic. Over the summer, before October 7th, there was a lot of protests in Tel Aviv and Yaffa, where he's from, where they were protesting against this current Israeli government. And, even from 2020, 2019, I know there's been a few elections. A lot of the newspapers that I read, especially the ones from Israel, they're like, Netanyahu's out. And this was obviously before October 7th. But, even as early as, 2023 of the June, they were like, Netanyahu's going to be out. And, this is a democracy. He's voted out. And now we're going to instill a new government. However, nothing changes. And he stayed in power, even still to this day after, 3-4 years of losing elections. So I don't know if you can kind of, go into that a little bit more, because I'm not aware of how a democracy works if, you elected somebody and the loser still stays in power. I didn't understand that. And this is a genuine, question, because I don't understand that. And then if we have a little bit of extra time, I want to see his thoughts and maybe opinion of what's going on in like East Jerusalem with like the forced evictions and Sheikh Jarrah and the other homes in East Jerusalem in the compound of Jerusalem, where they're forcefully pushing out Palestinians out of their homes and instilling Jewish families or Israeli families in those compounds. Because other than that, I know we can go back and forth and say who he said, she said, and disagree on a lot of the things or a lot of the information that's going on. But I do genuinely want to know what's going on with the government in terms of like maybe his personal opinions, but the overall picture of what's going on with Netanyahu's terms, and if he's going to stay the current leader of Israel for the coming future, or is he going to be pushed out once things settle down and now they can rebuild their government?
So Malik, thank you very much. Those great questions. Appreciate it.
Yep. Let me start from the East Jerusalem. And again, I said I'm not a Middle East expert, and honestly, I don't know enough to comment on it. If you guys know something, then please jump in. I'm not aware of that. Regarding Netanyahu, that's a problem. That's a problem. And I don't support Netanyahu and company as the governing body of Israel. But the bottom line, it is a democracy. I'm here today. I'm not afraid to say my opinion. I'm not afraid to oppose the government. People are not afraid to go every Saturday for the past year, it has been every Saturday, and demonstrate on the streets against the government. Why? Because this is a democracy. And yes, there were a number of elections, again, because people tried to take off Netanyahu from the government position. The fact that they were not successful is something else, but there is the system for it. And I do believe that very soon he will not be the prime minister. At least I hope so.
Let's go to Steve from Cudahy. Good morning to you, Steve. You say what?
Good morning. I just wanted to comment on your guest and the other speakers that you have, you included, regarding Israel and the two-state solution. You got to remember, when it was formed, they had part of a eugenic policy taken from America in the 1920s regarding population surveys and population growth.
They who? They who?
Like,
sir, they who?
The Israelis. The Israelis, when the country was formed.
Okay, sir, thank you. Thank you very much for the call. I don't think that that is relevant, or whether or not those things are factual. And I don't think that whatever it is he's saying, it adds anything to the conversation that we're talking about now. Let's go to Tom from L.A. Thank you, Tom. You say what?
Hey, Earl. First off, we the people ultimately are the government, and we must never forget that. Second, Ido, thank you so much for being on the program today, to actually giving a very, very clear picture of what is going on over there. Also, Earl, I would be interested to have the gentleman that you had on that were, I think they're Palestinians, a couple weeks ago, and Ido on to actually have this conversation, because one thing the gentleman didn't talk about a couple weeks ago is that when the people in Gaza, when the children are growing up, they're actually taught to, you know, be martyrs, to blow themselves up, all of these different things in their school.
To make absolute statements, you can't prove any of those things.
I think the curriculum in schools probably is a subject to being a fact. The question is,
That to blow themselves up, they're being taught that.
Well, I don't know. You know,
I know, but
I'm just saying factually. Well, I mean, it was the same statement that Adam made when he was on the phone with us on Tuesday. He talked about the same thing. So it obviously is the subject of discussion with respect to people talking about this, the condition in Gaza. And when I talk about the unsustainability of the circumstance in Gaza, that's one of the circumstances. Hamas is in control of many things, and they might be in control of the schools and the curriculum as well.
All right. We 844-967-2789. We're going to continue the conversation. We'll be right back.
Talk of Green Bay, WGBW.
Did you know there are some secrets behind the long-running popular Trans-Siberian Orchestra concert?
Organized chaos.
That's my favorite kind of show.
That's the best show ever.
Al Petrelli is the music director, guitarist, and an original member of Trans-Siberian Orchestra. TSO kicks off its winter tour in Green Bay November 15th.
That not only is there two shows in Green Bay on November the 15th, there's a show in Council Bluffs, Iowa, on the 15th.
But that's not all. In 46 days, TSO has 104 shows.
This thing grew up. It opened its eyes 28 years ago. It has grown up and broken every rule.
Breaking rules by taking two TSO bands on the road to perform in two cities almost every night. The tour ends in Milwaukee, 62 cities after Green Bay. One other secret, every stop includes a portion of the ticket sales given back to local charities. Learn more at trans-siberian.com. I'm Terry Barr.
This is the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW.
Special edition of the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. It's Friday. It means Fridays with my guest host, Sandy Williams, and a very special guest.
Ido Haber.
And just so we understand.
Ido Haber. I've got it now. I can do it.
So just so we understand, we are not looking to have adversarial discussions. We're looking to try to understand what the issue is, how it can be brought to a conclusion. And so what we don't want or need things that people heard that they don't have any factual information to back up, because the misinformation is part of what continues, Sandy, I think, to kind of lead us down the wrong path.
Well, misinformation and also, I think, a felt sense. So, a fact can be a fact, but what it feels like when you live in the circumstance is different. So I think the real problem we have is that the people involved in this are living in the circumstances, and from the outside, we can't really do it justice with words or discussion. But
all right, let's do this. CJ, go ahead.
Thank you, gentlemen, for taking my call. There is a difference between Hamas and Palestine. And the Yasser Arafat was offered everything that he asked for, and he turned it away with the PLO. The sad thing is that the Abraham Accords that were just signed and Saudi Arabia looking to come to a coalition, per se, with Israel is what helped drive this. And the mere fact that the president, yes, I believe he is trying to waffle and balance between his base as far as the difference between a pause and a ceasefire, only strengthens Hamas. And, Hamas, you did have, Earl, thank you again for taking my call, because many hosts won't. You did have a guest on that I asked a very simple question. Is Hamas a terrorist organization?
So, CJ, we don't need to go back over that. And thank you very much for the call. So let's again.
Well, I think CJ goes through a history that is a little bit instructive and maybe helpful. All of those things that he said basically happened, and the question of what impact it's had or what where it goes from here is really the issue. I'm not sure the extent to which why Hamas decided to do what it decided to do, when it decided to do it. I think he's reaching a conclusion there about the Abraham agreements that might or might not be true. I think one thing that is true is that Hamas has been disappointed and surprised by the lack of a coalition of Arab nations getting behind it. I think they maybe expected much more support than they're getting. which is promising to me. I think that the rest of the Arab nations don't have an appetite for what it is that Hamas is about. And to me, that's a hopeful sign. I don't know if you think so too, Ido, but...
I don't know what to tell you. I am glad that when they attacked on October 7th happened, Hezbollah was not a part of it right away, because that would have been bad for us.
Yeah.
And you in a war, you can't surprise somebody twice, right? Immediately on October 7th, the entire north was protected by us. Regarding the involvement of other Arab nations, I don't know enough.
Yeah.
So Sandy, I guess what I would say is, when our government and Anthony Blinken is speaking on behalf of the President of the United States, is it safe to say that? And our government. And what Anthony Blinken has been doing over the last 2 weeks, traveling to 8 different nations, is trying to find a way to bring an end to this and not to have this thing escalate even further out of control.
Well, I'm confident a major purpose of his was the latter in his first tour was to try and take the temperature of the other participants and try to make sure that they understood the consequences they would realize were they to support Hamas. And the rest of the current ongoing rhetoric about pause or ceasefire, I would agree is a bit of a tap dance in terms of a discussion. I think it is clear that the rest of the world is worried about humanitarian consequences, and I think that from what Ido said, Israel is as well, and the question is how effectively can a major war be waged in such a confined area against an enemy that is tunneled underground and otherwise embedded in the populace. And I guess that's the horror of this, is that the reality of the circumstance is such that humanitarian disaster is altogether probable as the result of the reaction to October 7th.
So that clearly is one of the issues that our government is concerned about. But again, as Blinken, his own words, that they are concerned about spreading this to broader region and to begin planning post-conflict Gaza and what it would look like. Sandy, as you always state, the end game.
Yeah, well, the end game. I think my concern about the Mideast generally and about the situation in Israel and Palestine is that there might be a clear end game, but the goal keeps getting moved and it gets further away. And so there clearly needs to be an end game that is accomplished. And I guess I don't know. Not having now talked to the fellows who were here who were representing sort of a Palestinian view and listening to you, it sounds like the goal is probably a little further out than I'd hoped. I had hoped that the awfulness of this conflict would surface in everyone's eyes the need to reach some kind of an arrangement that's solved for the circumstance that creates it. But it looks like that's going to be difficult.
So hang on. Got to take another hiatus. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back.
From I-43 to I-41. This is the Talk of Green Bay. 1590 AM and 97.9 FM WGBW. Did you know this local radio station is part of Civic Media? Learn more about the entire network at civicmedia.us.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Republican state lawmakers could make their next moves to impeach Wisconsin's embattled elections administrator as early as next week. That's what Representative David Steffen of Green Bay tells Channel 3 in Madison. Assembly Speaker Robin Voss referred an impeachment resolution to committee last week. That was right after a right-wing group launched a pressure campaign urging lawmakers to impeach Megan Wolf. Congress has 1 week to approve a new federal spending plan or risk a government shutdown. Jordan Anderson is a disability rights advocate from central Wisconsin. He says he worries about disability benefits through Social Security if his job status changes. Anderson also says he worries about water quality in his community. The U.S. House passed an environmental appropriations package that cut spending by 35%. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what you need to know closer to home.
For the talk of Green Bay, WGBW News, I'm Pete Schwabe. The Green Bay Area Public School Board wants to hear from you. The district is mulling a $150 million referendum for next April, which would include construction of a new Westside Elementary School. An increase in school security is also part of the package. You can see more and give your opinion by taking a survey on the school district website before November 22nd. It's always important to stay alert when driving. Recent data shows it's even more crucial when traveling Highway 21 in Winnebago County near Omro. The Wisconsin Department of Transportation reports that there have been 525 crashes on 21 in the last 10 years. In just the last 2 weeks, there have been three accidents, two of them fatal. The Wisconsin DOT is planning to build three roundabouts and two left turn lanes on the most dangerous stretch of Highway 21 in an effort to make it safer, but those projects are at least 3 years down the road. And that's what you need to know. I'm Pete Schwabe, WGBW 97.9 News.
UPUS Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager. Learning the lingo.
Jelly. Jelly adjective. Jelly is a shorter, better way to say jealous. As in, Chloe, I am like so jelly of your unicorn phone case.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same. Visit AdoptUSKids.org, brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUS Kids, and the Ad Council.
The Bucks lose in Indy. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Bucks' Giannis Antetokounmpo scored an incredible 54 points, and yet Milwaukee lost to the Pacers. The final, the Pacers 126, the Bucks 124. Adrian Griffin on watching Giannis at work, shooting 1 point shy of his career high of 55.
You know, it's just awesome to see someone with his length, his size, his footwork. He's going to go down as one of the greatest players to ever play this game.
College football, the Wisconsin Badgers have 3 games left in the season, next week against Nebraska, followed by Minnesota, and tomorrow they host Northwestern. Badgers safety, Hunter Wohler.
You know, with the talent we have in the locker room, we haven't been good on Saturdays.
The Packers head to Pittsburgh to face the Steelers. Mike Tomlin has been the Steelers head coach since 2007, a year longer than Matt LaFleur has been in the NFL.
I don't think he's ever had a losing season, which is incredible. He's the model of consistency in this league.
That's Packers head coach Matt LaFleur. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
Here's your updated forecast. Chance for scattered rain showers this afternoon. Otherwise, cloudy skies. Highs around 43. Northwest winds 8 to 15 miles an hour. Mainly cloudy. Tonight lows around 29. A blend of clouds and sun. Tomorrow, 44. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Ray Miller. Right now, it's 37.
When you're high, you feel different. You think different, you talk different, you draw different, you listen to music different, but you probably knew that. Problem is, you also drive different, and not in a good way. That's why driving high is illegal everywhere. So if you're high, just don't drive. Make a plan to get a sober ride. Because if you feel different, you drive different. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
From the home of the frozen tundra, Green Bay's choice for news talk, 1590 AM and 97.9 FM WGBW.
There she was, just walking down the street singing.
Good.
She
Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. It's Friday. It means Friday is my co-host, Sandy Williams, and our special guest.
Well, now I got to get it.
You do
a bear. Huh?
You got it.
I just want to say this to the listening audience. You know, 2 weeks ago on a Monday, we had a couple Palestinians in, and we gave them 2 hours. And so we're going to finish up the show today, and it'll be 2 hours. And then Sandy and I are going to basically, we're going to take a hiatus from this I think it was important that we had an opportunity, Sandy, to hear from both sides in this situation, and so we'd have done it after.
Well, you know, we're never done, but to concentrate on it, I'm afraid that what you end up finding out after you dig deep into this is, one, it's complicated, two, we're distant from it, three, it's very hard to understand the circumstance without being in the circumstance. And I think that's been the frustration of the parties that we've talked to from both sides, is that both of them are experiencing a circumstance. And I was a lawyer for a career and did some law trials, and I can tell you that in a trial, you'll have witnesses who are disagreeing with one another, but both of them are telling you what they believe to be the truth, because they see the circumstance through a different vantage point. And so this is the issue of diplomacy, is to try and sift through the vantage points that people have and try and find out the way that they can reach accommodation to one another, which is to see things through the same lens. And I think one of the real problems that has been identified is that Hamas is a terrorist organization. And I think everyone, including the Palestinians we talked to, would agree with that. And two, being a terrorist organization, they are not willing to be involved in what you could call a diplomacy that is designed to reach an end. So one of the difficulties we have with this whole circumstance is finding a way to reach an end when the active party, Hamas, is in charge of a group of 2 million people in Gaza, but is not responsive to them and is in control of them. And so I think in the near term, at least, that is going to be a serious issue. And I think we have uncovered that.
So at the end of all of it though, Sandy, is again the solution. And none of the things would be happening if there was a solution.
Well, there's no question, I think, and I think both sides would agree with this, that Hamas is the result of a circumstance, and that their ability to be in the position they're in and the fact that they are a terrorist organization results from a circumstance. And so the solution to that circumstance is obviously important in the near term and the long term. And I think that's what's frustrating to the world.
And so I'm not in complete agreement with you that Hamas is the result of the circumstance, because this, again, I said, and I think it should be repeated, it's not about the land for Hamas. This is not about the land. This is about religion and jihad.
But jihad has the history of radical religion, mm-hmm, like jihad, does relate to circumstance as well. So, I mean, the fact that jihadism and Islamists have become a force in the Mideast is different than the Mideast of Nasser, for instance, and the Pan-Arab movement was a secular movement and has been, and the vacuum that was created by the end of the Pan-Arab movement has probably been a condition that has, so, I mean, I just try to be a realist and look at things in the long view, and I do think that circumstances have an impact. I think you're right, though, that religion might be at the core of this. The question is, what is it that holds sway in a circumstance that causes radical religion to take a grip? Radical religion, in some respects, is taking a grip on Israel. So
a thought experiment, I propose.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Hamas get what they want. Israel is not existing anymore. do you think they will stop? Where do they stop?
I don't understand the outlook. Okay, so I have trouble visualizing what the answer is, but I guess the need is to get rid of, in some respects, a circumstance that would support people adopting radical jihadism. Okay, and mm-hmm. and that is there is a circumstance because there are I think 1.2 billion Muslims in the world. There are many, many, many Muslims.
I think it's reaching 2 billion.
And the numbers of them that embrace radical Islam might be growing, but it is an infinitesimally small percentage of that number. Mm-hmm. So there is some circumstance that needs to be dealt with. That's my point, I guess.
No, and again, I'm not anti-Islamic, right? Yeah. I have Islam friends. I think there's some beautiful things about the religion. Just to make it clear, right? I'm only talking about the radicals and Hamas for the purposes of the conversation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, but see, it gets to be a circular argument, a circular debate, because the Hamas is a small percentage, a very small percentage of the Palestinian population.
Why? What is the percentage? Do you know? Why do you say a small percentage?
Well, based on this is what I hear from our government. Okay,
mm-hmm.
and so they talk about, you know, the 200,000 number had been sprinkled around that I've heard. And all I can go by is what our government says. I don't have any factual evidence to back it up. 200,000? Yes.
10% of the population.
Yeah, that was a number.
Is that a small percentage for a terrorist organization?
No. I mean, that was a number that was presented to us by Adam on the phone. I don't know. I know that the active military number that's been presented to us, at least, was like 20,000. The number of the number of ardent sympathizers undoubtedly is larger than that. So you're right. I mean, if 10% is a significant number, but it's not it's by no means a majority. But it's a minority number that is material.
And again, nobody
to talk of like mm-hmm. an academician.
And again,
right?
Nobody knows what that number is.
Yes,
nobody.
No, okay. There is estimations, right? But keep in mind that Gaza is, 140 miles square.
Right. Size roughly. Of Milwaukee County.
It's larger than Madison, than the town of Madison.
No, the Milwaukee County is about 100, it's about the same square miles.
I was interested, so I checked last night. Madison is 100 square miles.
Yeah, it's a little bigger than Madison.
Imagine having 40,000 active terrorist participants.
Yeah.
Well, you know, people may say, imagine having 2.7 million people in that small area. It's hard to imagine.
Yes. No. Yeah. The Palestinian people are suffering as well. I'm not reducing that. I'm not questioning that. You know, I wish for them to find peace, resolution, democracy, and sustainably. My problem and the Israeli problem is not Palestine, it's Hamas.
Well, I think you do make a good point, because the picture you just painted is startling. If you take 20,000 or for whatever the number is, 20,000 terrorists and plunk them down into Milwaukee County and say, look, we've got 20,000 people here who are up to no good. That's a huge number, even though it's a small percentage of the population, so it presents a thorny problem. And when those 20,000 people are in charge of things such a way that they can build the whole infrastructure to support themselves, which is clearly what's happened here, because I think everyone does estimate that they've got 400 miles. Every road in Gaza must have under it a tunnel. You know, if you were trying to figure out how you get the many miles of tunnel into 140 square miles, it's everywhere.
Again, nothing new under the sun. Why aren't Hamas building shelters for civilians? It's a simple question, right? Why is there no electricity plants? Why do they need the help of Israel for electricity and water, or Egypt or the US? their leaders, their net worth is billions over billions, living in Qatar and Turkey in hotel rooms, right? And the people are suffering.
So, you know, in almost 2 hours of our discussion, as well as the 2 hours that we had with the Palestinians and 4 hours, Sandy, it's safe to say that we're still, you know, universes apart on how to fix this. And at some point...
Well, to be honest with you, I'm not sure we are universal, because I think the Palestinians would agree that Hamas needs to be gone as the power. And I think that that's Israel's position, too. I think the harder question is, how do you get there from here? And that is a difficult issue. And what are the parameters for conduct to get from there to here?
But there are going to be two sides to the question, because it's not just the Israelis and what the Palestinians, Hamas. The other thing is, what do you do about the Palestinians? People agree that Gaza has not been a place that is you know, acceptable to human beings living a fair and equitable life. So it's got to be an answer on both sides of it.
Yeah.
You know, that's just kind of what we're talking about. And that's why I say, after these, you know, two times of having the conversation, we're no closer to solving it for both sides.
Well, I do think what we are closer to is the listening audience that has a sense from people who are close to it and think about it, what their thoughts are and what the history is. I mean, it is true that Americans are so protected by the Atlantic and the Pacific and our remoteness that we don't really understand the circumstances. We didn't understand the circumstances in Ukraine. We don't understand the circumstances here and the circumstances elsewhere in the world. And it might be that the more we do understand it, the better we could develop foreign policies.
So we've got to pay some bills. When we come back, we'll certainly give you a chance. We'll close out this subject for this morning. And thanks for taking the time. Oh, we got a couple minutes yet. Okay, let's go to the phone lines and Ali. Good morning to you, Ali. You say what, sir?
Good morning.
Yeah, go ahead quickly.
Good morning.
Quickly, go ahead.
Hey, good morning. So my question is to everybody. They keep saying, you know, Hamas. There is no Hamas in West Bank, and West Bank is being attacked. There wouldn't be Hamas if there wasn't an occupation.
Thank you very much for the call. You want to respond?
Yeah. Hamas was established in late 70s, early 80s, something.
I think 1967 was, I think, that charter. I think if you looked at it, I think.
No, I think it's later than that. Okay. Yes, I believe it's later than that.
So it was after the 67 war.
It was after the 67, maybe 74.
So it's just.
There weren't settlements.
Hold the thought.
Okay.
844-967-2789. We'll be right back.
So I told her all the things I've been dreaming of. Now we're together nearly every single day singing.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW.
In the words of Joseph Campbell, a hero is someone who has given his or her life to something bigger than oneself. WGBW 97.9 FM, 1590 AM, Talk of Green Bay would like to recognize members of the United States military who gave the ultimate sacrifice in defending our freedom. This message made possible by Rennes Group, offering assisted living, memory care, rehab, and skilled nursing services. 715-582-2200.
Don't let biased algorithms or degree screens or exclusive professional networks or stereotypes. Don't let anything keep you from discovering the half of the workforce who are stars. Workers skilled through alternative routes rather than a bachelor's degree. It's time to tear the paper ceiling and see the stars beyond it. Find out how you can make stars part of your talent strategy at tearthepaperceiling.org. Brought to you by Opportunity at Work and the Ad Council.
The Talk of Green Bay, WGBW. Okay.
Welcome back to the last few minutes of a special edition of the Earl Ingram Show. It's Friday. It means Fridays with my co-host, Sandy Williams, and our very special guest.
Joe, how are you, Bill?
All right. So, Sandy, you want to, as we...
No, I think, we really appreciate your coming and giving us some insights. And I think that it's interesting because the reactions to this are not reflective of partisan party lines in the United States. I think it has to do with people looking at this and not being able to understand it and trying to figure it out, trying to categorize it, coming up with terms like occupier or things that help them put it into a category in their mind that can decipher it and decide who the good guys and bad guys are. And obviously, vantage points differ on that with respect to the participants. Israel has had a unique situation since 1948 and before that as a Jewish state in the midst of Muslim countries and has gone through periods of time where the secularity of the Mideast did not seem to pose much danger to Israel. And then as the Mideast is desecularized and become much more ardently Islamist, for instance, the danger must be perceived much greater. So I think, you know, to an Israeli who lives in Israel and has the risk surrounding them of the potential for a war that is premised on not geography but religion, it must be a very different feeling.
It's a difficult time. It's a difficult time. I'm a grandson of people who managed to escape the Holocaust, leaving family, brothers, sisters, parents, who were not able to escape. So this situation is extremely difficult. I have experienced anti-Semitic, an increased anti-Semitism on and off campus.
Really? In the United States?
Absolutely.
How does it manifest itself? Is it are you reading anti-Semitism because of positions people are taking about Israel, or is it anti-Semitism aimed at a Jew for being a Jew?
That's a good question. I think people don't realize to a certain degree, not completely, what they're doing. I think it increased substantially since October 7th. But I know friends and people across the United States, Europe, that are afraid. Because if you look at the demonstrations of pro-Palestinian supporters, they are aggressive. They are often come with assault. Just yesterday, one of my friends received a rock coming off a building walking down State Street. The university made an announcement about it, but this is not a single event.
A rock, did you say?
A rock.
And were they was it because they were Jewish? And
absolutely.
Did the person, were they identifiable as such?
There was a demonstration. I think there was a demonstration yesterday around the Capitol. And then when was a pro-Palestinian demonstration, and then some poor Israeli or Jewish were there as well when they walked down State Street. There was an altercation.
Let me ask you. I live in a community that is full of Hasidic Jews,
mm-hmm.
right? My neighbors.
Yes.
I have dialogue and conversations mm-hmm. with them. And so I've never been called anti-Semite
mm-hmm.
for any conversations that I have. Yet sometimes if you don't agree with and you ask questions about things and don't agree with Jews in some instance, you are challenged as being anti-Semite. My neighbors who are Jewish as well, I don't ever get that. So why?
I don't think that's the situation. I will never call somebody anti-Semitic. I hope others too, for challenging and having a civil conversation. The opposite. I've tried to do that unsuccessfully with people around town to try to get a coffee and challenge each other's point of views. That doesn't happen. Typically, the people partake in demonstrations that become violent, and it's unfortunate. And I personally feel the increase in anti-Semitism on and off campus. Absolutely.
Well, you know, I think that's obviously very, very concerning. And I think that, you know, the Mideasterners have gone through a long period of time where they have felt persecuted. I'm afraid that tribalism is rearing its ugly head in America in so many ways. And I'm afraid this is another one. And we aren't doing much. Our leaders are not doing enough to talk us, to coax us out of our caves in which I think that all of this tribalism is based on fears. And I'm afraid that this fearful public that we have in America is retreating to some dangerous things.
So let me ask both of you guys as we end this conversation for now. There's got to be, Sandy, at some point, a coming to Jesus moment, if you will, where, you know.
There's some real irony in that.
Where we finally say, hey, human beings are human beings, and the value of all life is equal. And we have to stop elevating some lives above other lives. We live in a world that does that. And until we can fix that, we can't ever come to solutions. We're going to continue to need spending $1 trillion on military, Sandy, as you and I talk about all the time. All of these different military bases and all of the different weapons of mass destruction to destroy other human beings, because as human beings, we don't give value to equal life in the society. That's where we've got to fix it, right there.
I think the problem is not militaries around the world. I think military is an important body that can help a nation, not just in confrontations with other nations, but in extreme situations. Plus, there was so much advancements in science coming from military.
We can't deny that. We got
to
end it. I'm sorry, man. Yeah. We got to end it. We got to get out of it. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you, Sandy. Thank you, everybody, who took the time out. We got to go. Yeah. There we go.
Mino and the Mayor in the morning. And the talk of Green Bay all day long. 1590 AM and 97.9 FM WGBW. Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us. The Talk of Green Bay, 1590 AM and 97.9 FM WGBW programming is broadcast from the Bug Tussle Studios.
Bug Tussle, keeping you connected to the world around you.
It's fully leaded education talk.
Hard facts with a humorous twist.
Check out Busted Pencils, Tuesdays at 7 on The Talk of Green Bay, 1590 AM and 97.9 FM WGBW, and on the Civic Media app.
We've all felt left out. And for people who move to this country, that feeling lasts more than a moment.
We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay.
WGBW 1590 AM Denmark. W250 CV Green Bay.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.